Welcome to the latest edition of the Star Blades podcast ahead of a huge match for Sheffield United at the weekend. I'm Chris Holt, and with me is Blades writer Danny Hall to talk over that encounter with league leader Burnley and a little look back on that big win over Bristol City earlier in the week. As well as that, we'll discuss the man who made a lot of headlines without actually playing very much and the continued importance of October's Blades Player of the Month. This is the Star Blades podcast. I'm getting better, Dan. I feel like Gary Lineker should be looking over his shoulder. just before we go any further, if you hear any squeaking behind me in the background, there's nothing untoward going on, but we've had to bring in the family guinea pigs from outdoors because of the fireworks. So if you hear any funny noises coming from behind me, that's exactly what it is. There's nothing else going on.
I was not expecting that, I'll be honest with you. I was expecting, but it wasn't that.
Anything could happen in this house. Right. I'll tell you what, we'll start off chronologically. So we'll take a look back at Bristol City, first of all. A really strange match, one where United really had to dig in and use up all of the very limited resources that they had available to them. And managed to a bit of a, I think a smash and grab is probably a fair way of putting it, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a huge win, isn't it? Not even just because, you know, the manner of the way that it was earned. Obviously, before kickoff, starting chronologically, as you say, yet another injury blow with Tommy Doyle being the latest to be struck down and checking into the treatment room with Bramall Lane. We're hoping that he might recover from that calf injury for the weekend against Burnley. And that was a massive blow as well because he's kind of cemented that position, hasn't he, in midfield alongside Oliver Norwood. I think after a fragmented pre-season with Tommy through injury, you know, I think he was really starting to show signs that he was settling into things at Bramall Lane. We talked about last week about how he sort of bought into Bramall Lane so well and kind of showing that on the pitch, and he's become a bit of a fan's favourite. So to lose him pretty much on the eve of kickoff, Paul said he travelled down to Bristol. He had a fitness test kind of to see if he could make it through the game on the morning, but they decided not to risk it, which is probably sensible considering the ridiculousness of the injury list that they have to contend with. So to take risk with players at this stage is probably a little bit would be a little bit silly. So another injury blow on the eve of it, but then, you know, the game itself, you know, United were probably, I can't think of a worse performance they've put in under Paul Heckingbottom since he came in. You know, people watching or listening to this might be able to come up with one off the top of their head, but I was struggling to think last night of one where they were consistently poor for so long. You know, there's been times this season, you know, where they've played badly. The first half of Preston was pretty average. You know, at Hull, they weren't quite at their best for long periods, but this was a consistently, you know, average, below average, pretty far below average, actually, performance from the Blades. Nigel Pearson in the week said that his team battered United. I'm not quite sure that it was as bad as that, but, you know, Bristol City looked by far the most like it score early on. I really like the look of Alex Scott, their midfielder, who looked pretty dangerous. They had a few chances, so many flashing across the face of goal. It was just a classic. It was almost, again, going back to the Preston game where they've not scored. They'd scored about two goals in nine games or whatever it was at that point. And they had lots of the early running, but you could tell why they've not scored that many goals, if that makes sense. There were so many good crosses, no one on the end of them, poor finishing. And then, you know, when the big chance kind of did come for Illiman, you know, he stuck it away. A kind of different type of goal for Illiman. You know, we've used to him scoring these ridiculous, you know, running from halfway and finishing, you know, really calmly. It was almost a sort of Billy Sharp type finish in reverse, if that makes sense. So he's showing, you know, that he can kind of come up with these different moments when he's relaxed, when he's needed. You know, his eighth of the season, which is a brilliant return at this stage for a player like Illiman. Yeah, horrendous conditions near the end, a torrential downpour. You know, we thought, you know, Bristol might end up flooding or something at one point because the rain was ridiculous. That would not have been nice to play in. But I think the kind of game that it became where, you know, United really had to dig in and show every inch of their kind of, you know, solidity and experience and nous and all those kind of words that you come up with, character and bottle and a few others that are not really suitable for a family-friendly podcast. They kind of showed all them. I think it suited them down to the ground. You know, Paul said yesterday, ideal game for Jack Robinson to come back in. You know, he absolutely loved that kind of backs to the wall, you know, physical kind of showing bottle and character and all that kind of thing. He loved that. You know, again, Basham, Egan, you know, the back three were solid. Midfield helped out, wing back's brilliant. And it was one of those sort of, you know, like I said before, digging, you know, get out with the 3 points, kind of result that not going too far, not trying to be too dramatic about it, but could define a season, really. You know, if you look back at games like this and you think that's where, you know, it's games like that that you sort of remember, isn't it, in a converse kind of way. It's not where you, for me anyway, it's not where you blow a team off the park and win 4-0. Although those games are good, you know, you wish you saw more of them, but it's those kind of gritty backs to the wall, character defining, season defining games that sort of stand out in your memory, if that makes sense. I don't know if you're the same as me or if I'm strange in that respect, but it kind of shows a different side of things, doesn't it? It shows that character and spirit and everything's there, especially on the back of a run of 6 games without a win. So to win 2 in a row shows things are obviously going in the right direction. It wasn't a night to remember for Rida Kadri, which I'm sure we'll touch on very shortly. But yeah, for United as a whole, just to get, it just shows that, you know, perhaps, you know, reports of their demise that were going round after that 6-game winless run are perhaps a little bit exaggerated, a little bit premature.
You touched on it there in terms of season defining. If nothing else, if we really argue that that's maybe a bit too much, if nothing else, it could be certainly seen as a bit of a turning point, particularly for the defence, which had come in for a fair amount of criticism over the past probably 6 weeks or whatever, because of the nature of the goals that they were conceding. They were conceding sloppy goals, and there just seemed to be a little bit of justifiable in a sense, legginess and just kind of mental fatigue maybe as much as anything else. But the solidity of the defence on Tuesday night showed that, you know, they're able to do that, and that, you know, particularly when your creative players aren't doing an awful lot, or, you know, they don't have the opportunity to do an awful lot, this is when you need your defence to dig in, and that's what they did.
Yeah, you need that, don't you? You need that sort of defensive solidness as a starting point, and then you hope that your star men will create something out of the blue, don't you? I mean, throughout that unbeaten run, throughout that winless run, I should say, when they were conceding goals that were poor goals, you know, people rushing out of position, you know, leaving players onside, that kind of thing. But we kept hearing things like, oh, they're uncharacteristic. And you think, well, how long can this go on for before they become characteristic, if that makes sense? And I think you showed on Tuesday night, you know, things are starting to turn, you know, quite dramatically. We said after the West Brom game that for so long in that game, players made individual errors, or, you know, the opposition came up with a moment of magic and it just turned the game completely. I think at West Brom, there were a couple of moments when they should have scored, in fairness. You know, Phillips got in behind, Grant got in behind, poor finishes. And on Tuesday night, you know, when they hit the bar twice, maybe four games ago, one of those flies in the top corner and United lose 1-2, 3-0. You know, so maybe it's a sign as well that those little kind of fine margins are turning. You know, we talk about luck and fortune a lot in football. But I think there were moments in that 6-game run, you know, where fortune was going against United a little bit. And maybe in these, you know, these last 2 games, there's a sign that those little bits of, like I said, fine margins maybe are turning for the better. And let's hope so, because, you know, we all look back at the end of a season and think, you know, that could have easily gone the other way. You know, you look back at, you said before about Hull, West Fodderings was massive double save. You know, he made one again at Preston, which could have turned the game. You know, those little moments kind of went in United's favour a lot in the first 9 games and 10 games. And they sort of went against them in the next 6. So hopefully we're going back in the other direction again. Those little moments go in their favour. And then with that defensive solidity and, you know, players like Illiman who could just turn a game like that, you know, it's a good recipe, isn't it?
You touched on him there. Rida Kadri has been in the headlines quite a lot this week. It's never nice to see a player get hooked in the first half, you know, when they haven't been injured. And I imagine as a player, you know, it's a bit like that, you know, the substitute being substituted kind of thing. There is an element of embarrassment about it there. In fact, there's quite a lot of embarrassment, I would imagine, and you probably feel quite a lot of anger because you feel like the manager's giving you a chance and then he's giving you half an hour, 35 minutes or whatever it was, and then going, oh, actually, no, he's not doing it. Off you come. And especially, I think, given that it was so close to halftime where he could have gone, right, well, let's just take it to halftime and see how it goes. I'll have a word with him and maybe change things the way he will want him to do, or just make that change anyway. I think people would maybe understand a halftime change a little bit better, even though it was only kind of 10 minutes before. But just to kind of explain to listeners, what exactly was Paul Heckingbottom's rationale for that change?
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned about the embarrassment. That's exactly how we spoke to one ex-United player after the game and asked him if he'd ever been dragged in the first half. And he said no. And he said the same thing. That's like the ultimate sort of embarrassment. In fairness to Reader, and this is what Paul said after the game, and he repeated it yesterday in his press conference, it wasn't, in his words, a reflection on how Reader was playing. It was a completely tactical thing. Reader, in fairness, he didn't pull up any trees, in fairness, in the first 35 minutes. But in fairness to him, he wasn't alone in that by any stretch. It could have been pretty much any of the team that made way if, you know, Paul had to make a tactical choice. Obviously, Paul's rationale was that he wanted to play a flat three in midfield, as they've done so well since Sanderberger's injury. But with Tommy obviously injured on the eve of the game and John Fleck only able to play kind of 45, 60 minutes as he comes back from injury, he obviously didn't feel he had the personnel or the sort of, you know, his personnel weren't in the right position to play that flat three from the start. So he played Reader as a, you know, up front with Billy as Illerman as a number 10, as we all know. And then he said within 4 or 5 minutes, he realised that this isn't working. You know, City were seizing a lot of control in midfield. They were all over United early doors. And Reader weren't in the game. Illerman wasn't in the game. Billy wasn't in the game. You know, this is not a reflection on Reader. It wasn't a solely Reader problem. It was a shape problem. So Paul and Stuart McCall and Jack Lester realised after 4 or 5 minutes, he said he could have made the change after 4 or 5 minutes because he realised that he got it wrong. And he said to us yesterday, he waited and waited and waited as long as he could. But then, I guess in football, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, aren't you, a little bit? Because if he waits till half-time, Bristol City scored twice in the last 10 minutes of the first half, you're 2-0 down and it's too late to do anything about it. So, you know, you're almost, like I said yesterday, if he didn't do it and it didn't work, he'd have kicked himself for it. So yeah, I suppose these are the decisions that managers have to make, aren't they? This is what you paid money for. This is what you are in charge for. You have to make some difficult decisions sometimes. But like you say, when you saw James McAtee get stripped after 34 minutes, whatever it was, just after half an hour, you're thinking, kind of almost hoping for an injury, if that makes sense, in a strange kind of way, which is daft to say considering the ridiculous injury crisis this season. But you're thinking, oh, surely he's injured. But then with Reader's kind of response, where he looked around at the bench a little bit dumbstruck almost when he saw his number 11 put up and then slow walk off straight down the tunnel, and you think, yeah, that's not, you know, that's not an injury. And like most people, you know, at the time we possibly thought it was a reflection of his performance. Like I say, it wasn't sparkling, but it also wasn't the worst. And then Paul, you know, I think it's a sort of reflection on his, we say, like management skills or his people skills kind of thing. Afterwards, he was at great pains to point out that wasn't because he was playing poorly. It wasn't because he wasn't dragged because of his performance. It was a purely tactical thing, you know, kind of looking after his player a little bit, who, to be fair, I don't think that's a great secret. Not had a great start to his career at United. I don't think that's too harsh to say. I think everyone who's seen him play can say that. Reader himself, I'm sure, will hold his hands up and say it's not gone as he would have wanted so far. But Paul, you know, stressed to us afterwards and again yesterday at his press conference that it wasn't a reflection on how he was playing. It was purely because of how he wanted to set up and how he admitted that he got it wrong, and Reader, unfortunately, which I can see, you're not going to take Illiman and Jai off, you know, because he's been the star man this season. You're not going to take Billy off because that wouldn't change things in terms of the shape he wanted to go to. So Reader really was the only person, the only change he could make. And I guess it's important to say as well that it was completely vindicated because James McAtee puts the cross in, Illiman scores the winner, and you win the game and you bring home 3 points. So, you know, you can't say the decision didn't work off, didn't pay off. The only unfortunate fall guy was Reader. And now obviously there's questions about how he goes forward from here. Does he, you know, will he go back in January? Will he be seen again? Will he turn around his United career from this point? You know, which I wouldn't be surprised if he did at all. Really a talented player in there. It's just a big kind of mental test for him now. How does he come back from this? How does he bounce back?
I think if it had been anybody else,
yeah,
not so much of a big deal would have been made of it. But I think it's because of the fact that he has found opportunities to play quite hard to come by since he came to the club. People are, we saw, I think it was against Blackburn, maybe. We've certainly seen flashes of what he can do, but we haven't seen a lot of it. And inevitably, because of the player he is, he's exciting. He is a player when he's on it, that he gets people off their seats. Inevitably, fans want to see more of that. And I must admit that I have wanted to see more of it, having seen him put in those flashes, as I've said. But because he hasn't, and because of the nature of the way he plays, bringing him off kind of seemed worse. I think if for instance he had started with James McAtee and it didn't, well actually maybe McAtee's a different example because he's young, but you know, yeah. Seeing it John brought off John Fleck, people might have gone, well actually, you know.
Yeah, it happened last. I look back to last season when Slavisa was here and he started Conor Hourihan in the game against Millwall, I think it might have been, from memory. And after half an hour or so, he saw it wasn't working and he dragged him off. And I think Oliver Norwood came on and United obviously looked better after that. Obviously, Conor Hourihan alone, who maybe didn't have the impact at the time he would have wanted to have. And I don't remember any sort of headlines like there's been about Reader. So you spot on in that it's been magnified because of the player that it is. But yeah, it's kind of a big debate, isn't it, amongst United fans now. How do you get the best out of Reader Kadra? In fairness to Paul, I keep seeing people, you know, saying, oh, he's not had a consistent run in his sort of position. No one seems to know what that position is.
Well, what I was going to say,
Blackburn is a winger.
Just on, I think yes. He's probably best as potentially a 10, but he's not better than Lamin and Jai, is he? So, you know, he's probably back up to Jai's position.
Yeah. And then on the times he has started, he started away at Stoke, and apart from one moment with a nice pass to McAtee, didn't really do it. You know, the times he has started, he's not exactly cemented that position, has he? Do you know what I mean? If he's putting 8 out of 10 performances in every week and then next week he's on the bench, I think everyone will be justified in saying what's happening with Reader, you know. But we're seeing, as you said before, quite rightly, little glimpses. I think he was good when he came on against Sunderland, from memory as well. But that's all they've been. That's all they've been, glimpses, haven't they? And then when he has had that chance from the start, fair enough, one was at left wing back, I think it was. And he was the least defensive defender you'll ever see in football history, I think. You know, out of position, it's hard to judge. But then when he has started in fits and starts, you know, he's not exactly pulled up any trees either. So I can kind of see both sides of it. It's difficult for him to shine in such fleeting kind of appearances. But then if you're not doing it when you do get those appearances, what are the coaching staff supposed to do? You know, you have to earn those starts, don't you? You have to kind of put your hand up and say, this is my shirt, especially when, attacking-wise at least, those positions are kind of highly sought after. You know, like you say, you're not going to displace Illiman at the minute, who's been my player of the season by an absolute mile. You know, Ollie McBurney's got 7 in 11. You know, and when he doesn't play, you've got a club legend in Billy Sharp there. And then further back, you know, can he play further back? Possibly not. So where do you go from there? You know, it's sort of I can see all sides of it, really. And luckily, it's not my position. It's not my problem, sorry, to solve.
Nigel Pearson threw his opinion in twice, actually. He spoke about it after the game and again in the press conference yesterday. I don't know what you think about it. My opinion changed on the reasons behind what he was saying when I read yesterday's quotes. We had Bitter in our headline on Tuesday night or Wednesday.
I think I did my yesterday one as well. I think I did.
And I can see why it came across that way, but having read, I kind of feel like actually it wasn't so much bitterness as a little bit of a here's some, if you feel like changing your mind, the door's open in January kind of thing. Do you know, I might be reading it the wrong way myself, but it kind of get the feeling. Yeah, he did go for the player. He did want to bring him into Bristol City.
If that is his approach, then I can't imagine. Imagine there's better ways of signing a player, is what I will say, than slagging him.
Well, no, that is true. There's better ways of saying it. But he did back that up by saying that in his press conference yesterday, he did back that up by saying that the team needs a little bit of a maverick, I suppose, and somebody who's going to cause a little bit of a fuss. We should point out that at no point has anybody ever said that Rita Kadra
I think
because of the way he plays, and he's got this sometimes little bit of a language style about him, a bit like Lise Moussain, really, in a different way. I'm not comparing, but nobody ever really said that Lise Moussain was a problem in the changing room, or he didn't get on with anybody or anything like that. It was just, you know, he wasn't really putting it in. And there's a bit of that with Kadra. People automatically assume that this kind of maverick player is, you know, kicking up a fuss and arguing with coaches and falling out with teammates and all that kind of stuff, when there's absolutely no evidence to suggest that that's the case.
Yeah, it was bizarre. I mean, obviously, we have a little peek behind the curtain, but we don't see it day in, day out. And even when Nigel said that in front of us, we were kind of like a few raised eyebrows and people looking around thinking, where's he got that from? And we asked, obviously, Paul and Oliver Norwood yesterday, who obviously worked with him day in, day out, and they said, no problem, absolutely no issue. You know, going back to when he signed, you know, if there was that kind of issue, then he wouldn't have signed him. You know, as we said yesterday, you know, he Paul and his coaching staff, you know, they don't just take punts on players. You know, they do actually look into players' character and asking, you know, previous managers what they're like. I've no doubt that Paul picked up the phone to Tony Mowbray and asked what he was like at Blackburn last season. You know, and if that was the report that came back, you know, his high maintenance, difficult character, and whatever else Nigel said in his bizarre rant, then he wouldn't have been a United player. Simple as that. So it was just strange. I personally wonder if it is a case of, because there was a mention about, we wanted him in the summer, but the player or his agent or whoever made the decision. I think that might have been a little bit of being Nigel's bonnet about why he didn't come to Bristol City, and the bit about, or maybe he wishes, you know, that he'd come here now, you know, after seeing the manager come for him twice in the space of 3 days or whatever it was. As bad as it is going, or as difficult as it is going at United, I'm pretty sure that Reader maybe doesn't regret not going to Bristol City. That might change, you know, if he does end up there in the future. You know, I'll be surprised for one. It was just strange. I question the sort of, not going to say morals, but the sort, you know, of coming for another team's player like that in such strong terms, you know, saying, you know, any chance of him running about has been a bit of disappointment, that kind of stuff. It was just really strong, bizarrely strong stuff for me. You know, it just seemed a little bit strange to, it's sort of against football convention, really, isn't it? It's not, you know, how many times do you see, oh, I'm not talking about another team's player or whatever, especially one that you've confessed to trying to sign and would probably sign again. You would imagine that if, you know, by some streak of fortune, Reader goes back in January and then there's a list presented to his agent and Bristol City is on that list, you would imagine that it gets struck off very quickly, wouldn't you, based on the strength of that?
I wouldn't be so sure.
We'll see.
We've at times run away with this and we haven't even spoken about Burnley. However, yesterday, or I think it was certainly earlier this week, Oliver Norwood was named October Player of the Month. Just before I give you 2 minutes to wax lyrical about how great Oliver Norwood is,
here, it's all again, 2 minutes. Can I have 20?
I mean, you could come to me to do it and I'd be on for it. I'll leave it to you. Yes, here's what Oliver Norwood said yesterday when he was speaking to the press, just off the back of being awarded October's Player of the Month.
Ollie, then, I gather you are the club's Player of the Month. How do you assess your own contribution over the last few weeks?
Oh, is that for me?
That's for you.
Oh, well, I didn't know. Thank you. I think we've played a lot better than we did, obviously referring to Tuesday night, and not got results, so it just shows football at times is a funny old game. The six games we went without a win, I don't think we particularly played bad. I think we played quite well, actually, and a couple of draws, a couple of disappointing losses, obviously, but we've regrouped and won the last two. And I mean, obviously, it's a nice thing to pick up. But I'm not playing it down in any way, but I'm literally doing my job for the team and the job I'm asked to do, and that's all I'll ever do.
Oliver Norwood there speaking to one of our colleagues at BBC Radio Sheffield yesterday. The floor is yours, Danny. Just go ahead. You can just talk in the most glowing terms about how great Oliver Norwood has been this season.
What could we possibly say that's not already been said? My only thing there is how he was so surprised about winning the Player of the Month. Give him the trophy now. But yeah, as we said yesterday, obviously he's up against his boyhood team this weekend. But he's just so instrumental to how his team goes about its business, isn't it? It always makes me smile, or it baffles me a little bit, the kind of criticism that he gets. I think the standard that he's held to is just so high that whenever he inevitably falls below that slightly, you know, it stands out so noticeably. But I think the only time you will appreciate how good he is and how integral he is to this is when he's not there anymore. I keep saying that in 5 years, the people who are now, you know, who don't rate him or whatever will be saying, you know what we need? We need a midfielder who sits at the base and just dictates play and, you know, sticks his foot in and kind of makes his tick. And I'll be thinking, yeah, well, we had that and you didn't rate him when he was here. So that's what it'll end up being, I'm sure. I'm convinced of it. People only realise how important he is when he's not here anymore. Let's go back to the Norwich game when he made a 60, 70-yard diagonal pass to George Baldock on the right. I don't know if you remember this. And George didn't have to move an inch. It was perfectly flyer to go over the head of the defender and land on George's toe. And it got a polite smattering of applause in the south stand. And I thought, the level of skill to be able to do that is absolutely remarkable. You know, but I think a lot of people just sort of expect that now from him. Does that make sense? You know, it's almost like that's just what he does, you know. And then when he inevitably gives the ball away, like he said yesterday, if he didn't give the ball away, and he said this with all respect to Sheffield United, if I didn't ever give the ball away, I wouldn't be playing here in the Championship. Do you know what I mean? He'd be playing at a far higher level. But we have to kind of, I think, anyway, we have to kind of accept the times when he does give the ball away, because what impresses me about him so much is that when he does that, he never ever hides. I've seen midfielders come in to United before. I'm not going to name names on here, but I've seen when they're having a bit of a stinker and you watch them and they're hiding behind midfielders, not showing for the ball. Never seen Ollie do that once. You know, he's demanding of it. He's screaming at defenders, give me the ball, try and make things happen. And then just his resilience as well. He said yesterday, I can't remember the last game that I missed. You know, when all around him seemed to be falling like flies, you know, him and John Egan started every game this season, I believe. And they just seemed to be so robust, so ever-present. I think John falls into that category a little bit as well. I said this to a guy in Ireland who I know was doing a piece last week. He said, I think John's almost underappreciated a little bit in some quarters just because he's been so consistently, you know, on a level when he falls slightly below that, which human nature, they will at some point. I think it just stands out so much more and he gets a bit of stick for that as a result. But yeah, Ollie, can't speak highly enough of him, really. You know, just the way he makes this team tick. As a senior player posted yesterday, him and John, also again, Billy and Bash and those kind of players, they kind of set the standards for the younger boys to follow. And as I said before, you know, we'll only miss him, really, as a team and as a fan base, I think, when he's not here anymore. And hopefully that period is, or that time is, a long way away yet with his contract up in the summer. He's not yet had any conversations about extending that. He wants to stay, as he told us yesterday, and hopefully that can get sorted out, because, you know, apart from, as he admitted himself yesterday, apart from the second Premier League season, you know, he's been, for me, superb ever since he came to the club, really. As soon as he came in, he was a revelation in that Wilder team, I think. Did it in the Premier League. Did do it in the second Premier League season, but no one really did, to be fair. Was integral again last season and has been a key man again this season. So, yeah, can't speak highly enough of him. Player of the month, well deserved. And hopefully, as we said before, many more to come from him.
Good. I'm literally not going to talk about it, because I could talk all day and all night about how great Oliver Norwood is. We've got this far and we've barely spoken about Burnley, so we're just going to try and wrap that up very quickly. It's amazing how much you can talk about a scruffy 1-0 win.
It's never dull, is it? It's never boring.
Oh, it's not. This is a huge week for United. You know, the next three games just before the break for the World Cup. There's something of a derby. I don't like to call it a derby, but it's a kind of a derby in midweek, and then Cardiff next week. But first up, league leaders Burnley come to Bramley tomorrow. That's huge, isn't it?
Yeah, looking forward to it. Yeah, huge sums you up. And to be fair to United, they've made no attempt. You kind of see ahead of games like this, sometimes teams try and play it down and kind of, you know, try and downplay its significance. United have made no attempt to do that, which I agree with. Because, you know, look at the table. It's first against third, you know. So you can't really downplay how significant this is. Going to Bramall Lane, hopefully a decent atmosphere, early kickoff, which can sometimes quieten the crowd a little bit. But hopefully there's, you know, as Paul said yesterday, getting the boozer early and get behind the... get a few pints in and get behind the lads kind of thing, because they'll need it. You know, Burnley obviously don't need me to sit here and say they're a good team at the top of the league. And as we saw on Wednesday night, when Rotherham, our dear neighbours, as you say, looked like doing us a bit of a favour by taking them deep. But that's what good teams doing, isn't it? They keep going till the end. Was it 91st minute equaliser, 98th minute winner? That's what good teams do. And as they said yesterday, a bit of a change under Vincent from the Sean Dyche years, playing a different type of football. It's obviously working out. You know, he's been backed to bring in a few players in the summer. And they look a very good outfit, don't they? I see kind of similarities between the two, with, you know, a young, kind of exciting, pacey player in Teller, similar to Willem and Jai. Rodriguez up front, kind of similarities there with Ollie McBurney. And yeah, I agree with Ollie yesterday, said that if a team finishes above Burnley this season, you know, you would imagine that they'd have a pretty damn good chance of being in the Premier League this season. So would have been nice if Rotherham would have held on Wednesday, which meant that they were in touching distance this weekend. But, you know, but Bramall Lane, you won't fancy coming to Bramall Lane either, I bet, on the back of two wins, you know, probably on the back of six games without a win, that I've seen this as a much more promising prospect coming to Bramall Lane. But on the back of two wins in a row, it kind of changes things a little bit, doesn't it? They'll be coming here for a win, no doubt. United obviously will be going 3 points, so it should make it a decent occasion, decent game. And I hope there'll be no time wasting from the 10th minute. We won't see any of that, I don't think. They'll come here to win, and United will go for 3 points as well. So it should be, touch wood, a good one. So put your money on a nil-nil boring draw after saying that.
Just very, very briefly before we wrap it up, team news. What is the latest? Is there anybody due back? Is there anybody may not make it? What did Paul say yesterday?
It's getting hard to keep up with the injury news, isn't it? Ndiaye had cramp on Tuesday, so he'll be fine. McAtee almost lost a leg in that ridiculous tackle late on. I felt sorry
for their lad. It was a terrible tackle, but I actually did feel sorry for him. He looked like the colour drained from him, like he realised immediately after he'd done it what had happened.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
Yeah, so James took a whack to his leg, knee, head, everything really, I think, in that tackle. I think he was a bit concussed afterwards from what Paul was saying, a bit shook up. But credit to him, just quickly as well, him and Illiman, despite having probably one leg between the two of them, fit and ready to play, they stuck on, they stayed on, they didn't, you know, put the hand up and say, I'm coming off. They stayed on for the cause. Chris Basham came off hip flexor injury, an issue that he's had for the last couple of games, but they're hoping that he will be fit and available. Obviously, Nell comes back after suspension, so possibly Bash might not be risked for this one, with Jack Robinson staying on the left, and Tommy Doyle as well. They're hoping that his calf injury calms down in time for him to be available. But as before, you know, if it's not 100%, then I doubt he will be risked. But I guess that depends as well on who will replace him, because central midfielders at the minute are not exactly, you know, they're not blessed with too many at the minute. So it'll be a team, I guess, of slightly walking wounded. Ollie said yesterday a lot of players are playing with slight knocks and, you know, cramp and things like that. But they'll cobble together a team for Burnley, and we'll see what happens.
That's great. Thanks very much, Danny. Thanks, everybody, for watching and or listening. Keep up with everything that happens tomorrow at Bramall Lane on thestar.co.uk/football. We'll be back, Danny and myself, will be back on Monday to talk over that match and give a little bit of a preview to the midweek match against Rotherham as well. And by that stage, hopefully, the gap between first and third will be a little bit closer. So thanks again. We'll be back on Monday. See you later.